Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
He's going to have starts where you say, I'm really glad that I watched that. I'm really glad. He's going to be must-see TV.
We're hitting the top prospect in the Dodgers organization. You almost definitely know the name and you've got the right people to talk about it. Here's our prospect profile. Roky Sasaki is the name. The sweepstakes, of course, is over. Scott Braun, along with Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Ben Badler. Ben, you've been covering Roky Sasaki for some time. I have to imagine that once he officially signed with the Dodgers, you were like, cool, there's their top prospect.
Yeah, that one was not much of a debate, right? Not much of a long conversation there. You're getting a frontline starter and somebody who should be a frontline starter from day one, right? This is a guy who's got an upper tank fastball. You can say the velocity backed up last year if you want to, you know, poke holes in his game and say that's maybe a red flag. What's going on? Still an upper 90s fastball. And then he pairs it with this just unhittable splitter. I mean, when he throws it right, it's just an absolutely devastating pitch. The bottom falls out of it. It doesn't matter if you're lefty, righty, how good of a hitter you are. It's a wipeout pitch. And then the slider is like, oh yeah, that's kind of a plus pitch too for him. So throws a lot of strikes. It's a pretty easy athletic delivery. Pretty much every box you want checked in a young starting pitcher he has, with the exception of durability, right? We'll see how that goes. I think the Dodgers will be able to keep him on that six-man rotation, ease him in that way. They're not obviously counting on him to be like the savior of their rotation by any means, so they can manage his workload very carefully if they need to. So I imagine they will do that, but I got to think, too, he's going to be everybody's favorite to be Rookie of the Year this year.
It's kind of almost, it's both impressive and sad at the same time that the team that already had everything adds the best prospect in baseball. Because like for a lot of places, Roky Sasaki would immediately be the star of the team, or could be. We could see, I would say we'll probably see it a little bit less consistency, but we could see at times a Roky be like what we saw with Paul Skenes last year, where he has just outings where it's like no one's hitting him. He's just shutting you down, sit down, on to the next day. And he has that ability because he has been laid out. He has two top-tier pitches, especially when his fastball's on, and the third pitch is very useful already. But I also think that the Dodgers are probably going to help him unlock another gear as far as his pitch mix, as far as his assortment, because there are probably some different things he could do to kind of give hitters another way to kind of have to defend against him, because everything's pretty hard. And it's kind of, when he's on, it's that fastball splitter back and forth. You kind of, maybe he starts to put something else, maybe a sweeper or something that eventually becomes something that a cutter, something that just puts a little different idea in a hitter's head. There's kind of some more potential for refinement, more potential for development here. But what he is right now is already really, really good. And like Ben said, the durability is probably the biggest question, but the Dodgers don't need him to be especially durable, especially in year one. Wouldn't shock me at all if they were extra cautious. And if there's ever a moment where there's a twinge or anything like that, they just shut him down for a month and say, okay, don't worry. We've got plenty of pitching to get us through the regular season. Don't worry. We're going to make the postseason. We can promise you that. And then the real question is, where is he pitching in that rotation come the postseason? Because this is going to be one of the greatest battles of all time if everyone stays healthy, because You would think that Blake Snell has to start games in the postseason. You'd think that Tyler Glasnow has to start games in the postseason. You would think that Yoshinobu Yamamoto should start games in the postseason. Oh, yeah, by the way, we think that Shohei Ohtani should probably start games in the postseason. And then Roki Sasaki. I'm guessing if we see recent Dodgers history, not all of those five will be ready to go come October. But at the same time, if they all are, that's the embarrassment of riches of all embarrassment of riches. But you look at Sasaki, and if Roki Sasaki is playing and pitching at his best of his ability, he actually does start games in the postseason over some of those names I just mentioned. And that just tells you how exceptional his talent.
You know, it's funny. I just thought about this, JJ. We don't know how Otani's going to bounce back. And I know we're talking about Roki here, but let's say Otani doesn't bounce back from surgery. And remember, there was also a shoulder issue and a surgery in the offseason. He might not be good enough pitching wise to crack the starting rotation in the playoffs. That's the picture you painted. Most people assume they're not going to have all of those arms intact for October based on last year's results. That might not necessarily be the case, because this is a team that knows they're going to get into the playoffs. So they're going to do everything they can to treat this whole case like a marathon. Roki is the perfect example. So to tie it right back to him, if you are a fantasy baseball player and you're watching this show, this might not be the pick for you, or don't overvalue this pick because of what you said. They might have absolute kid gloves on, give him breaks if there's any sort of issue, right? And still even give him extra rest and have a lot of other arms to mix in. As far as his big league impact, tell us what we can expect from him this year, if some of what you're talking about and some of what he adds to, you know, the arsenal, or at least learns from within the Dodgers system, actually pans out in year one. Just one other example I'll point out before we get your thoughts. Shota Imanaga last year was highly debated in the offseason. I think we talked about him a little bit on this show, among other shows, including the one behind me, Foul Territory. There were some people that we spoke to that said this could be a one or a two. There were just as many people that said this could be a five. He looked definitely more like a 1-2-3 than a 4-5. So I know they're not the same pitcher by any means, but sometimes it's hard to completely take what you see in Japan and convert it to what it's going to look like in Major League Baseball. Your thoughts on year one?
The way I would put it is Paul Skenes last year, if you're a fan of baseball, right? You don't have to be a Pirates fan. I knew when Paul Skenes pitched and I wanted to make sure I didn't miss it. That's what Roki Sasaki, I think, has a chance to be pretty much right away. It doesn't mean that every start will be perfect. If you told me that he has somewhere, oh, he's not really locating the splitter tonight, and so he doesn't have a plan B to get hitters out, and he's struggling a little bit, okay, that might happen. But what I would also say is he's going to have starts where you say, I'm really glad that I watched that. I'm really glad. He's going to be must-see TV multiple times this year, I would say. You know, as long as he's healthy, there are going to be starts where you just say, I'm really excited that I got to watch that. And the thing I've been saying about this for years, when you have a young pitcher like this, right, they may get better because as pitchers age, they get craftier, they understand what they're doing more and more. But at the same time, there's something about seeing that fireballing 23, 24-year-old, 22-year-old that just has a level of excitement to it that you don't see from a 27-year-old. I will never forget watching Kerry Wood, you know, when he was a young rookie. I will never forget Steven Strasburg's big league debut. There was so much hype surrounding it, and he was every bit as good as that. He was like, this is exactly what you're looking to see. Paul Skenes did that last year. That's what Roki Sasaki could be, is a guy who just has those outings where you go, wow, that was magical. And has outings where you say, I mean, he's already thrown one of the best games in professional baseball history. You know, a perfect game with 18 strikeouts. That doesn't happen. Was it 19? Like, it's, you know, absurd. And then he followed it up the next start by throwing 8 perfect innings. When he's on, no one hits him. And those are the kind of starts. So when you say impact, I would say his impact is he should have some of the best pitch games in the major leagues in 2025, not in 2027 or 8, in 2025. Now the question is just how consistently can he do it?
There you go. That's ace upside from the jump. And that was 19 Ks in that one. So get ready, Dodger fans, and really just get ready, baseball fans. if you want to see what Roki Sasaki can bring to the table. And also he's pitching for, you know, what we call now the evil empire in Major League Baseball, the team that already looked stacked heading into the season, obviously gets the best prospect available this offseason, and they didn't have to waste a draft pick. And he's not getting paid a lot in the grand scheme of baseball talk. So that's the top prospect in the Dodgers system right now. That's your prospect profile. We have prospect profiles for every single team, so make sure you look back and check those out. And if we're missing one, it means it's coming out because we release them on a day-by-day basis during spring training. So we'll see you on another one.
His power is such that, yes, I do think he can be that thumper, that masher that the Giants have long lacked.
Let's hit the top prospect in the San Francisco Giants organization, according to Baseball America, with this prospect profile. The name is Bryce Eldridge, and he could be coming to the San Francisco Giants soon. That's how we want to start this out. Scott Braun, along with JJ Cooper and Ben Badler from Baseball America. Ben, ETA for Big Bryce. What do you think?
I mean, Jesus, the guy was just drafted out of high school last year, or 2023, I should say. He's got 1 year under his belt, and it might be this year, which is kind of crazy. I mean, I would not have thought that when he was drafted, as much as I love Bryce Eldridge, but he's flown through the system. It's gigantic raw power. I mean, he's from a gigantic human being, 6'7", 6'8", and this is also probably the least amount of power that Bryce Eldridge will ever have, because he has more room to continue to fill out and get stronger. He's still a pretty lean, athletic body. So by the time he's done filling out, packs on more weight, I think we're talking about a guy who could be a 35, potential 40-plus home run hitter. There is swing and miss in there, right? When you're 6'7" and your arms are that long and your strike zone is that big, there's going to be some swing and miss pretty much no matter what. But I think he's going to be able to keep that under control, especially for a guy who was pushed as fast as he was this year. Like if they had kept him in, say, low A all year, or even just low A, high A, it wouldn't have been quite as – the strikeout numbers wouldn't have been quite as high as they were. But even if that's always part of his game, I think he's going to be able to keep that to a manageable level and tap into the just incredible power that he has.
The thing that kind of jumps out to me, like Ben said, the way that the Giants moved him last year tells you both what they think about him and how quick this timetable is. Because like where a lot of his contemporaries spent last year in A-ball, this was, hey, I'm going to start in low A, go to high A, go to double A, and finish the year in triple A. Not many guys do the four stops in 1 year, check every box off your full season minor league baseball card in one season. That doesn't mean he's not going to go back triple A to start the year. But you don't have to look too far out here to think that there's a chance that Bryce Eldridge could be the Giants' best pure offensive, you know, biggest bat in the lineup, I should say, by the end of 25 and really by 26. Because if you look at this Giants lineup, now obviously Willy Adames is a very nice addition. They have guys who are well-rounded, Patrick Bailey, Matt Chapman, Willy Adames. But if you said a pure thumper who's just going to be one of the better hitters in the league, they don't have one of those guys. They really haven't had one of those guys all that often. And that's what Eldridge could be. Now, he better be, because as Ben laid out, this is a guy who's a pretty massive, a human. I mean, and by the way, he was a two-way guy in high school. Like, I'll kick it back to you for a minute, Ben, which is when you saw him kind of coming up as an amateur, where did you think that this was bat all the way, or did you think that this was the guy who had a chance to be a pitcher?
The first time I saw Bryce Eldridge, I was at a field going to watch, mainly to watch a player from the Bahamas. So I look over another field, and there's this 6'6", 14-year-old throwing like 88, 90 miles an hour or whatever it was at the time. And that was Bryce Eldridge. And I was like, wow, that was impressive. Just watching him more and more over the years. Yeah, leading up until his draft year, he's a 6'7", very athletic right-handed pitcher who was up to the mid-90s, showed feel for spinning a breaking ball, could repeat his pretty sound mechanics for a guy that size. I think if the Giants had let him, he could be a legitimate two-way guy. Obviously, I don't think that's going to go back and happen now, but yeah, this guy, for as much, big as he is and as much as we're talking up his power, there's other tools there too. Yeah, I mean, it's limited defensively, but there's obviously arm strength and a pretty impressive athlete too, for somebody who's as big as he is.
So a little trivia question, one of my favorites, and then JJ hop in, but do you know actually the last player to hit 30 home runs for the Giants?
We have to go back to Bonds.
We have to go back to Barry Bonds. You know, people are dying for this. You guys are mentioning, hey, we need like a lumberjack in the lineup. And everyone's like, well, he looks the part. So can he be the guy to actually crack the code in San Francisco? I know it's not an easy park to defeat, but come on. It's been like decades.
That's the thing I would say is he is one of those guys where, like, to just use the cliche, you know, Yellowstone's not holding him in. I mean, he can hit it out of any park. And yes, he is. Now, anyone's going to be affected by, you know, by playing there. It's not going to, doesn't mean, you know, that he's not going to lose some home runs, but his power is such that, yes, I do think he can be that thumper, that masher that the Giants have long lacked. And I just look at it and say, like, again, maybe last year was a little fast. If you told me, I would not freak out if I was a Giants fan, and we get to May, you know, early June, it's like, oh, Bryce Eldridge struggled a little bit in AAA. It's like, that's okay. You know, he's 20. Give him some time. I know, though, that Giants fans, understandably, if they see that a little bit, they're a little scarred right now, maybe, because it's like, oh, wait, is this Marco Luciano again? Oh, wait, is this Luis Matos who struggled a little bit? Oh, wait, is this Joey Bart? I would say give Eldridge a little time, but he just does have a more well-rounded bat, a more well-rounded hitting approach than some of the guys. And hey, the good news if you're a Giants fan is Elliot Ramos did bounce back last year, was a guy who was a top 100 prospect, and it seemed like his career was kind of being stalled. And then last year he found another gear and now fits very much in their lineup. But so it's not like they've been all misses. Patrick Bailey's been a hit as well, but the Giants do need Bryce Eldridge to really kind of make an impact, because this is a team that has kind of struggled to produce those kind of everyday regular hitters.
Yeah, and you look at what's coming up behind him too. I think there is a lot of weight on his shoulders too, because it's, look, I like what they've done maybe the last couple of years with their international signing classes, but those guys are years and years away from being big league ready. The rest of the farm system right now outside of Eldridge, like, you look at their top five, top 10, it falls off pretty quick. I mean, a guy like Dakota Jordan, who they drafted this year, who's, you know, number five prospect in their system, obviously has a lot of tools, but huge swing and miss risk with him that, you know, that we saw in college. James Tibbs, you know, a good hitter, but not these guys are not to the level, obviously, of Bryce Eldridge. I think the talent really falls off, you know, in the Giants farm system after the top 3-5 players. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of weight on his shoulders for things to click.
Why do you think this has happened so frequently? I know it's not easy to pinpoint, but JJ, I mean, the development has been a problem recently for San Francisco. And also, I mean, for the position player side of things, it is still one of the premier pitcher's parks in the sport. So you come up to the show, you face tougher pitching, you look at that park, and it's holding in a lot of baseballs that you used to smash over a wall. And that can be defeating for a young player's confidence.
I think that can be. And also, the reality is this is a team, even though they've kind of had their ups and downs at the big league level, this is a team that kind of has been trying to contend with the Dodgers and the Padres year after year. And so I think that there's also been kind of a short window with a lot of these guys. I don't know if Joey Bart was ever going to work, you know, in San Francisco, but it was a pretty short period of time before they went from, this is not Buster Posey's replacement, to, you're in Pittsburgh now, I see. Marco Luciano has been up a couple times, but they really have never figured out, hey, this is your spot. We're going to give you some time to really develop. It's something where they're kind of the curse of the big market team that wants to contend. You don't have the same amount of patience. You don't have the same amount of, here's 250, here's 350 at-bats to figure it out. And don't worry if you struggle at the start. It's been a little bit quicker in a lot of cases than that. And again, we see even a guy like Elliot Ramos, he kind of had that hot streak where finally he kind of grabbed hold to it. But I don't know if he, you know, might not have found himself elsewhere if it hadn't been for that. Because again, it's just, you got to produce. And there have been guys who haven't produced right away who've kind of been moved on from pretty quickly.
So, Bryce, no pressure. Maybe don't watch this video, but this could be a big deal power threat finally coming through to the San Francisco Giants lineup. And he's on the fast track, even though he's super young. He is the top prospect right now in San Francisco Giants organization, according to Baseball America. We do this on every single team, so make sure you check out our other videos or look out for more on the way. And we'll see you on the next prospect profile.
But if Jordan Lawler comes out in 2025, has a really great start to the season, well, this is a big league ready shortstop.
Let's talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks and their top prospect in the organization. It's a name that's been around for a minute. It's Jordan Lawler, and it's your prospect profile. And it is Scott Brun along with Baseball America's JJ Cooper and Jeff Ponce. So where are we at? We've heard Jordan Lawler's name for a minute. We haven't seen him blossom in the big leagues yet. Jeff, do you think it's going to happen?
Yeah, I think if it's going to happen, it's probably going to be, you know, this year, possibly next. I would imagine, you know, the big question has been with him has really been health over the last year or so. You know, he did have shoulder surgery right after signing, but did put together a couple of decent years. Of course, got up to the major leagues in 2023, and then this year dealt with a hamstring injury as well as a thumb injury, which really, you know, more or less cooked him for almost the entirety of the season. I think when you look at the player, he can play in multiple spots in the infield, probably most at home at shortstop. He's got a good arm there, fairly rangy. You know, I don't think he's somebody that's going to be like a 70 defender or a plus defender at shortstop, but could be an above average everyday defensive shortstop, gets on base. I think the power at times was probably a little bit overbuilt. He can hit for power, but it's probably more like high teens power than it is like the 20 plus to even 30 that you might have heard at draft time. He's a good runner. Straight line speed isn't crazy, but you know, enough that he can steal probably 20, 25 bags, especially in that lineup. And, you know, as aggressive as the Diamondbacks can be in terms of base stealing. So I think he's a really good all around player. You know, the top prospect certainly in that system. It's just a matter of, you know, do they move on from Perdomo? Do they, you know, potentially move Suarez off of third base and he ends up at third base? There's multiple ways that he could sort of fit into the Diamondbacks this season. But the big question with him has been health, and he's dealt with, you know, a litany of injuries throughout his professional career.
His opportunity coming into 2024 might have been a little bit better than it sits right now. Jeff mentioned Perdomo. Perdomo had a pretty solid year and did enough to where if Jordan Lawler kind of came out of 23, he was up with the big league club at the end of the year, and you're kind of thinking, okay, 2024 will be the year that the first round pick, the top prospect in the organization, takes that step forward, kind of nails down the shortstop job and kind of holds that for the rest of the decade, really. And here we are a year later, and Lawler's coming off of his second significant injury as a pro, had missed basically the whole year. He did get to play in the Dominican Winter League a little bit, didn't set the world on fire there, but did get to play, which is good. Kind of gives some shakes off some rust before spring training. But we are sitting here going into the 2025 season saying he fits in the mix where a year ago kind of thought he was going to be the guy. So I do think that the 2025 season is going to be very important for Jordan Lawler to, one, just show he can stay healthy because that's been a problem so far, and two, kind of hopefully kind of get the opportunity and take and claim it to say like, hey, I'm the shortstop in Arizona. I'm the shortstop for this team for the rest of the decade. Still looks like long-term that's his job to hold, but it is a little bit of a tougher task maybe now than it was even coming out of last year. And the thing that just kind of really does jump out at this is you don't want to forget that he's really young still. He will turn 23 right around the All-Star break. So I don't want to make this sound like this is a 26-year-old, 27-year-old who hasn't gotten established in the big leagues and time is running out. This guy's not really much older than some of the college draftees we'll see in the upcoming draft. So there's still time on his side. Jordan Lawler could still be a very impactful, a very well-rounded big leaguer. It just does mean that, man, you just want to see him be healthy for a full year. And it hasn't been like one injury. It's been kind of a variety of injuries that have really derailed him so far.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
It's funny, you know, it gets me thinking, Jeff, about how much or how quickly we move on these days, right? Jordan Lawler was really, really heavily discussed for, you know, a year or two. And then you see these struggles and these injuries, and he becomes an afterthought in terms of, you know, the national conversation of prospects. In fairness, Jackson Churio wasn't talked about much, you know, after May when he was struggling in the first month. And then people had to circle back around and be like, oh, wait, hold on. He's a baby. And now he looks like a star already. But anyway, to get to my next point, do you think that the Arizona Diamondbacks are in an okay spot from an organizational standpoint? Or should we be concerned that this is still the guy that's kind of leading the pack here among their best prospects?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a good major league roster. You know, obviously they went on a little bit of a late run last year. They do have some kind of a pair of interesting prospects at the top in Lawler, and then Demetrio Crisantes, you know, who's in the midst of chasing Mookie Betts' minor league on base streak record that will continue into 2025 if he continues to get on base over the first, whatever, 10 or 12 games. I think there's some interesting players they added to the system this year, and guys like Slade Caldwell and Ryan Waldschmidt. Adrian Del Castillo certainly had sort of a breakout last year, and I think kind of reestablished himself, particularly as a hitter. But there's some other players in this system that really haven't taken big steps forward. Drew Jones is obviously kind of the prime suspect, you know, among those players. Tommy Troy, a highly touted, you know, positional player out of Stanford, you know, infielder. I don't want to say necessarily middle infielder because we'll see where he ends up landing. But in a lot of ways, you know, Troy a couple years ago was getting compared to Matt Shaw's, like when he was in the Cape Cod League, which player is better? And I think, you know, Shaw has certainly established himself as a professional, and Troy sort of done the opposite. So there's kind of been a lot of underperforming picks here. I thought they had a pretty good draft in 2024, so we'll see where that takes them. And they haven't had any huge hits in the international market of late either.
The thing I will say, though, this also does provide an opportunity for the Diamondbacks. Now, to give kind of the rose-colored glasses version of this, Jordan Lawler is still one of the better prospects in the game. He's still near the top of our top 100. And he's kind of, as Scott said, he's kind of, you know, he's kind of faded from the conversation because he's really missed a whole year, kind of disappeared from, you know, from kind of view as he rehabbed and tried to get back on the field. But if Jordan Lawler comes out in 2025, let's say he starts off in AAA and has a really great start to the season. Well, this is a big league ready shortstop, which gives the D-backs at that point, they can really say, hey, we've got the depth that this provides because we have 5 guys really for 4 spots in the infield. Or they could also look at it and say, hey, whether it's Perdomo, you know, whether it's Lawler, whether it's, you know, whether it's Ketel Marte, who's, you know, been great for them. There could be a potential move down the road here where you say, okay, there's a lot of depth here. There's a lot of opportunity. And for a team that was in the World Series 2 years ago, that's not a terrible thing. This is kind of a potential opportunity where they may have 2 guys who could handle the job, where 2 years ago it was like the question was, do they have one? So that to me is kind of something to be interesting to watch in 2025 is, does Lawler's potential reemergence kind of create both a challenge for the Diamondbacks, but also an opportunity? Because he already has hit in AAA. It's not something he needs to shake off some rust. It's no problem for him to spend a little bit of time down there, but he probably doesn't need a full season in AAA just to get of additional seasoning. And if that's the case, at some point, they're going to have some decisions to make.
I mean, I remember now 2 years ago or 2 seasons ago chatting with Jordan Lawler during media day heading into the World Series. Right? Obviously, he wasn't, you know, a factor, a guy for Arizona at that time, but we were like, damn, this team's in the World Series. And Jordan Lawler is one of the best prospects at the time in baseball. And just imagine if he blossoms and becomes a star for this team next season, which was this past season, which obviously they had the injuries, but it is a good sign for Arizona. Plus, they did damage in the offseason by adding someone like Corbin Burnes to the big league roster. So we'll see if Lawler can be an above average performer for this team and cause some good problems like JJ's talking about. We're going over every single top prospect organization by organization. So swing back here to the Baseball America channel for more of these.
He's the kind of guy who's going to fit and should fit in the San Diego lineup late 26 or 27, which is a crazy projection for a guy who will play this entire season as an 18-year-old.
Hey, the San Diego Padres love to swing trades, but they also find some high ceiling prospects. Leo DeVries is next in line. Let's talk about him. That's right. It's your Baseball America prospect profile. Scott Braun with JJ Cooper and Jeff Ponce. JJ, is this superstar potential for the Padres? I know it's going to take a little time. He's young, but what are we seeing?
The way I would describe how the Padres approach the international market, this fits with AJ Preller. If you wanted to use a poker analogy, they're going all in, and they're not spreading their risk. They're not diversifying into a well-rounded portfolio. They're not saying we're going to put some money on this pitcher and this shortstop and this catcher. What the Padres like to do is identify someone that they see as a star, and they like to make that star kind of the center point of their international class. They did it with Ethan Salas, and here they've done it with Leo DeVries. And by the way, once they do, they then want to send that guy on a rocket ship through the minors. We saw that two years ago with Salas, and last year again, we saw that with Leo DeVries, who, while most of his contemporaries were trying to get out of the Dominican Summer League, DeVries was in full season ball, and not surprisingly, considering how much the Padres are impressed with him and how the reason that they were willing to send him to the California League, he really more than held his own. He kind of took a little bit of time to kind of get comfortable there, and then was one of the better players in the league. This is a player whose approach to the game, his physicality, it all seems more advanced than you look at him and you say, wait, this is a teenager? This is a guy who is still probably 7, 8, 9, 10 years away from his prime. You see a lot of things already with when I've seen him play in person. You would not, if you were asking who's the youngest player on this field, and he always is the youngest player on any field he plays on, you wouldn't pick him out that way because he carries himself. He looks like a guy who has some savvy, who has some experience, and he has a lot of tools to go with that, Jeff.
Yeah, I think 100%. And, you know, you brought up a good point there. You know, was a little bit of a slow starter this year. Really started to get going in July, and then, you know, over the last few months of his season, really showed something. Hit 284, 407, 589 over his final 35 games. You know, season ended with an injury in mid-August. He was shut down for a little bit and then sort of returned, I think, maybe at end of the first week of AFL. Prior to that, his first 40 games, and as we said, you know, he was playing at a full season level as, you know, a 17-year-old, you know, hit 196, 319, 310. But once it sort of clicked in July, where he actually had 8 homers in that month, you know, he really took off. And I think if he had maybe had, you know, another 3 weeks at the end, tail end of that in August and beginning of September, as the season fully ended, we might have seen those numbers climb even a little bit more. Super twitchy. You know, I don't know if he stays at shortstop long term, but kind of a compact build, really good bat speed, you know, switch hitter, strong already, but there's room to potentially add more power. Not a double plus runner or something like that, but, you know, is probably going to be above average to at least average at peak with some power, with the hit tool, and is a matchup issue when you have a switch hitter with all the tools and do all the things that DeVries can do. So really, really exciting player. And I think, you know, when we're talking about the players that came from that 24 international class, we're going to look back and sort of compare DeVries and then Jesus Mate, who's going to make his stateside debut this year, just kind of shows you, you know, how much further along DeVries is than a lot of these guys that sign internationally and typically spend a year in the Dominican Summer League, or at the very least end up in the Complex League domestically. He skipped both of those and went right to full season ball. So it kind of makes sense why he might have struggled over those first couple of months as he settled in.
The thing that jumps out to me, just to talk about how young he is, he'll be 18 for the entirety of the 2025 minor league season. He'll turn 19 in the MLB postseason. He will not turn 20 until after his 2026 season is basically fully in the bag, unless he's playing in the postseason with the big league Padres. So you're talking about a guy who is a year, two, three, 4 years younger than the guys he's playing with. He may go back to the Cal League to start the season just to let it warm up a little bit in the Midwest League, but he's going to likely spend the majority of his season, or at least the start of the, you know, of his season, the majority of the season in the Midwest League in High A as the youngest player in that league. It wouldn't be crazy to think that he might reach Double A by the end of the year. Like, this is the kind of timetables that you just don't see normally. Now, the Padres are more aggressive than pretty much anyone else with players like this. But when you throw in the fact, Jeff mentioned, he's a switch hitter. Often switch hitters take a little bit longer because you got two swings to work on. Not a problem with DeVries so far. And to me, like, you just put it all together and you say, I don't know if it's going to be for the Padres or, you know, again, the Padres are aggressive in every way. If they can make a move and they need to make a move, he also could be a top trade chip. But he is the kind of guy, they love their shortstops. He's the kind of guy who's going to fit and should fit in the San Diego lineup late 26 or 27, which, again, is a crazy projection for a guy who will play this entire season as an 18-year-old.
Yeah, and I think one of the most impressive things, too, is you start to look at some of the underlying power numbers, a 102.1 mile per hour, 90th percentile exit velocity. That's on par with, you know, older domestic prospects with more experience that we rank very highly. It's actually the exact number that Walker Jenkins has for 90th percentile. He's a few years younger than Jenkins. But on top of that, being a switch hitter with a little bit of power, he consistently puts the ball in the air. He had a 60% fly ball plus line drive rate this year, nearly a 40% air pull. So he consistently gets the ball in the air, knows how to hit the ball in the air to his pull side. And that's split, you know, between both sides of the plate. So there aren't a lot of switch hitters that can do that. There's not a lot of young players that already sort of have, you know, pretty clean backspin and barrel control and accuracy at that age. And I think that the skills, which were already sort of average-ish for the level at least, when you put all that together, this is somebody that as he starts to catch up to the age plus level stuff could really take a humongous jump, whether it's this year or next year. And we really see him take off in terms of like a slash line, you know, production standpoint.
And I just want to kind of confirm this from both of you. The Padres do love to wheel and deal. AJ Preller is, I would say, what, top three in terms of front office leaders that make trades. He would do this if he got the call, right? DeVries? Putting the phone down. I mean, that's is that the one? No, you think DeVries even would be in play?
I don't think AJ hangs up the phone on anyone. Like, this is a guy who traded James Wood away, who, and, you know, was a little further away, but he traded James Wood. You know, this is a guy who traded Mackenzie Gore. This is a guy who traded for Juan Soto. I would say that he is not going to make a move. It would have to be something massive, but it's the Padres. Like, again, I don't think that there's anyone ever that he hasn't at least will entertain, like, and take the call.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have to be an absolutely elite young major league player for him to consider moving an asset like this. You know, the Padres, as JJ said, they do trade good prospects. They're probably one of the organizations that's the least scared of sort of that coming back to bite them, but I don't think this would ever happen. But like, we're talking like Gunnar Henderson or Corbin Carroll or, you know, Paul Skeens. Like, if it was a player like that that was available maybe a year from now, you know, Livy wants to move to San Diego. That's probably the situation where I think DeVries would become available. But I just think there's very few players they would probably make DeVries available for. He probably wouldn't hang up the phone because he would try to negotiate down to, you know, another prospect in the system.
Actually, you know what? If the Padres have a great first half, but they really are starter short, a phone call to, you know, Seattle. Let's say they're having a bad start to the year and they've got a young pitcher. The Padres want a controllable young pitcher. It's not going to cost a lot. That's where you can wheel and deal a little bit. Okay. So we're, hold on. We're picking it back. Did you hang up? You're still here? Okay. Never mind. That was Scott Braun. That wasn't me. I would never do that. Anyway, if you like this, we go over every single top prospect per organization. If you haven't seen your team yet that you're looking for, it will be out soon. Otherwise, scroll back to see others. And remember, Baseball America can be subscribed to. Go get yourself a subscription at baseballamerica.com.
He's probably shown maybe a little bit more durability than Sasaki has, you know, over the last handful of years. The Rockies sort of need something here, and this could be the beginning of sort of pushing this group of pitchers up to the major leagues.
Okay, the Colorado Rockies have work to do with their major league club. Let's see if they can find themselves an ace. The name is Chase Dolander. He is the top prospect according to Baseball America. Let's dive in. It's BA Prospect Profile. Scott Braun, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce. Jeff, Chase Dolander. Best arm in the organization right now, and I'm including big leaguers. Would you agree?
I think you can probably argue that this is one of the most talented pitchers the Rockies have ever had in their organization. Kind of going back, you know, looking at some of the names that have been, you know, top prospects, John Gray. I know JJ and I talked about this sort of off air as we were kind of writing up our reports during the offseason, getting things ready for the handbook. And you know, maybe there's Jeff Francis, you have Ubaldo Jimenez. Jimenez probably had the most success, certainly John Gray, but he's somebody that, you know, almost immediately upon coming into pro ball, you know, the report started to be a little bit less optimistic than what we had seen when he was, you know, a draftee or, you know, coming into his draft year. I think when we look at Dolander, yeah, he had slid back a little bit and fallen behind Paul Skenes, who wouldn't, among college pitchers in that 2023 class. He had a really good year, you know, handled high A very, very well, went up to double A. I think one of the things that was most encouraging about Dolander is they really let him go 90 to 100 pitches plus multiple times, particularly in double A. He was really working some of those, you know, better Eastern League lineups, which are pretty talented toward the end of the season, and showed an ability to pitch. Now, we get into the stuff. It is electric stuff. It might be some of the best stuff that we've seen from any Rockies pitcher, including Jimenez, you know, who threw very hard. Dolander this year sat 96 to 97 miles per hour, was up to 100 miles per hour. You know, traditionally, just looking at the flat numbers, he doesn't get a ton of ride on it. But based on his release height, which is really, really low, he gets a lot of ride for his release height, which creates a really sort of flat, difficult plane. It's kind of similar in that sense to like a Jacob deGrom fastball or a Garrett Cole fastball, where it has that flat plane of approach. It's harder for hitters to sort of get on plane with that in terms of the barrel. Mixes in a few different breaking ball shapes. He's got a hard cutter that sits in the upper 80s that he, you know, will touch 90, 91, 92, you know, with a little bit of ride and some cut. Got a more traditional curveball. He'll show a changeup as well. But really everything works off of that fastball. And, you know, it's sort of a what we would call a low launch fastball. So when you have a fastball like that, it's much harder to sort of get on plane because it doesn't have that sort of same downhill movement that you see on most fastballs. So he might be a guy, and I wrote an article about this in the offseason. He could be a guy this year that potentially cracks that Coors code. There's only been one Rockies pitcher, I think, in history that has a career ERA under 4, and that's Ubaldo Jimenez. I think Dolander might be next in line, and we could be looking back 5 or 6 years from now and saying, all right, maybe this is sort of what you need to hack Coors. You need, you know, this sort of weird fastball shape with a lot of velocity, and that might buy you, you know, a little bit more leeway than the typical arsenal will.
So good news, Rockies. If this works, you can replicate this by drafting one of the best pitchers in college baseball with these kind of unique characteristics. I think Dolander is actually a really good story as well. When we talked to him on our Hot Sheet show, he made the point he had two offers. He had two scholarship offers, basically, coming out of high school, and went to Georgia Southern, kind of dominated, transferred to Tennessee. The key thing, and Jeff touched on this, when you're talking about how much of an impact can he make in the big leagues in 2025, one of the key things going for him is this isn't a guy who hasn't work deep in games. This isn't a guy who hasn't thrown innings. He threw 118 innings. And I know you may hear 118 innings in minor league baseball and go, wow, is that? No, nowadays that's actually a pretty good workload. He also, though, before that, he had pretty heavy workloads, reasonable workloads, but he worked, you know, pretty full workloads at Tennessee before that as well, Georgia Southern as well. So this is a guy who, the best way I can put it is if you put him in the rotation early this season, you're not going to come to July and say, oops, he's already out of innings. Now, you might get to August, you might get to September, and you're skipping a start every now and then. But at the same time, we are talking about a guy who has shown that he can kind of hold up, has shown that he can handle a pro workload of some sorts. So you put the stuff combined with the fact that this is the guy who has shown some tendencies maybe to be a horse, and this is actually something for Rockies fans to get excited about.
Yeah, and I think it's very realistic that he could be somebody that potentially even breaks camp with the team. You know, he's obviously going to be up against it in terms of NL Rookie of the Year, you know, even in his own division, obviously, with Roki Sasaki in that division. You know, it could be an uphill battle, but he's probably shown maybe a little bit more durability than Sasaki has, you know, over the last handful of years. Of course, we're comparing college baseball, minor league baseball, you know, to the highest level of Japanese baseball, which is not an even comparison. But the Rockies sort of need something here, and this could be the beginning of sort of pushing this group of pitchers up to the major leagues. They have a few other guys sort of in the system that are more back-end guys, but kind of interesting traits. They seem like they've been going after actually a lot of these low release height fastball guys. I bring that up again because there's one pitcher who's never given up a run in his first two career starts at Coors Field, and that's Kyle Harrison, who is also a low release height pitcher. So when you start to factor that sort of stuff in, I think there might be some secret sauce. Maybe the Rockies are potentially cracking something here. It's interesting, and I think for sure it's unusual that we would rank a Rockies pitcher as highly as we do in the top 100, or even have him number one in a pretty good system. But I think Dolander is just that talented and has traits that, you know, could potentially lead to success no matter where he pitches.
I think it's always worth mentioning this, JJ. If you're a Rockies fan and you're watching this right now, you're super excited. Great. I might have a number one starter, one of the best talents arm-wise in the organization that they've ever had. But is there enough around him for this team to eventually be competitive? I don't even know if we're keeping track of a year of a rebuild for them, but it doesn't look like they want to really dance in the free agent market. Not even really crazy with trades, with dealing away some of their guys once they're in their prime. You know, Ryan McMahon was the prime example. It seemed like a couple years ago they could have gotten themselves a nice prospect or two. So are they going to be able to build somewhat of a prospect capital powerhouse to be able to compete in the NL West, or are they just in abyss forever?
Well, the thing that you just mentioned, like you can go back to Trevor Story is another example of that, where it's just hard to see what is the year, what is the goal that the Rockies are pushing for. Now, if Dolander really, you know, comes in and pitches the way we expect and hope he will, that'll be a big impact for them. They do have some young talent here, you know, up the middle, the outfield. If everyone in the outfield plays to the level they have in their best year, they could have a pretty solid outfield out there. You know, Doyle's had a good year. Nolan Jones had a good year 2 years ago. But you put it all together and you say, when is this team going to contend in the NL West? I would struggle to say, you know, anytime in the rest of this decade, because if you look at it, we know the Dodgers are going to be good. The Padres are way better than right now. The Diamondbacks went to the World Series 2 years ago, have more young talent. And then we throw the Giants in, who kind of are regrouping a little bit. But when the Giants regroup, they sign free agents like Willy Adames. That's not something that is really something that the Rockies are doing. So, I mean, it can get better, but better right now, the goal seems to be, you know, let's get to see this team can get to 81 or 82 wins. And that might be a pretty uphill climb, much less getting to 90 plus to contend in this division.
Yeah, it's a tough division. So we feel for you, Rockies fans, but there are worse situations. Not many, maybe one or two at this point. So at least they've got some talent in the pipeline. We are talking about every single organization and their top prospect, and then spilling the conversation into some others that you should be paying attention to. So make sure you check out all of the videos team by team here. We're releasing one per day during spring training.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.